everyone, and welcome to Minute 61 of Season 7 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis acting flick Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Lisa Leahy from the Rabbit Hole Podcasting Network. Welcome back to the show, Lisa.
Thank you so much. I'm super excited to be here. I love this movie.
I'm sure you are, because, you know, you're someone who told me like 3 seasons ago or 4 seasons ago what you wanted. And I wrote it down and I said, OK, this is the week that Lisa already gets. Nobody's got a chance of grabbing it. And there were people who wanted it.
But I appreciate that so much.
It's Lisa. You know, it wasn't the week that the most people wanted. If I remember correctly, the most people wanted the week in the elevator. If I remember correctly.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But it was like number 2 or something like that.
That's an interesting choice because that scene would never occur to me. I'd probably go for either way, you're gonna get me on one of the riddles. If it wasn't this sequence, it would probably be the one on the payphone. Or it would have been the opening sequence, because that's my, you know, purest memory of this movie.
Well, there's no riddle there, just a car blowing up.
Giant explosion within like the first minute and a half of that movie. And I was so delighted. I remember sitting in the movie theater and just being delighted. Like, this movie's going to be great. Something blew up already. Yeah. And then it went up from there. I mean, my goodness.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Oh,
absolutely one of my favorite movies of all time. Love this film.
I wonder where you're going to rank it later this week. We'll have to wait.
Gee, I mean, no spoilers or anything, but
Yeah. No, so the elevator fight scene was the one that most people wanted.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yes.
It's good to know that I wouldn't have had to fight for that one either. So it's good. But I sincerely appreciate it.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense. All right. So minute 61 begins with John trying to deal with the briefcase very carefully, and ends with McClane giving Zeus an order. So we ended things on Friday with John and Zeus standing in a wet fountain with an elephant on top.
Yes. It's an elephant joke. Don't you have kids, McClane?
Yeah, of course. We talked about that last week.
Listen, I need my moments. I'm going to steal them when I can. I'm sorry if I have to reiterate.
Well, based on what you've told me, you're going to steal lines from last week, yep, and next week at the same, yep, time. So, you
know. I got to do it. I got to do my thing. I can't. It's just so much. Oh, I love this movie so much. Have I mentioned that already?
No, you haven't. Wait, you like this movie?
Is there a little bit? You know, little bit. Okay, I mean, it was a slog to get through in order to prepare for this week, but you know, I'll do it for you, Rob. I'll do it for you.
I appreciate that. So John pulls the briefcase and like places it, I guess, on the rim of this fountain, and he starts to open it. And it's really cool. You know, I always love looking at older movies and seeing how technology has changed. You know, especially now we're dealing, you know, 29 years ago. So the technology of this movie has rapidly changed. And again, we'll mention it a little bit more later this week with some things that just don't make sense technology wise from the 1990s. But okay, we'll get there.
I mean, one of my favorite experiences of that, you watch the first Fast and the Furious movie, and the thing they're stealing out of that truck in that opening sequence are a bunch of combo VCR TV units. It's like, this was the big deal when that first film came out.
I actually used to have one of those. Wow, interesting.
Yeah.
So, you know, he opens up the briefcase, and we see what looks like a very ancient computer screen, you know, which has like the buttons on the side, and we have, you know, the holes on the right hand side, you know, to be able to hear what's being said through the computer or whatever it is. You know, then on the left-hand side, we see a whole bunch of different things that some of them look like they're like chip computer chips and stuff like that. But then another one is like a valve in it or something like that. We're not 100% sure exactly what everything is here, whatever.
It's very technical. And
And then we open it, and as he opens it up on the screen, it says we get a message saying, "I'm a bomb. You have just armed me." Okay, now that makes sense. You've opened it up. It's set up. You know, you whatever the technology is back then of how you do it, you know, you program it in, someone opens this up, and you're going to have that as a greeting, I guess you can say.
I mean, it seems pretty basic, right? I mean, you think about opening a laptop that's been put to sleep, and it's programmed to, once you open it up, it's going to activate the programs that you had. So I can totally see this working. That makes sense to me.
Yeah, makes sense. It makes 100% sense, especially since, you know, Simon, who has presumably programmed or had someone program it, he knows the code. So it doesn't make a difference to him, you know, if he were to accidentally open it up and need to use it or whatever it is, which later on he's going to use it. And nobody even blinks an eye about the fact that he doesn't need to put, you know, like 4 gallons of
water. 4 gallons.
Whatever. Yeah, they actually put a lot more. Yeah,
suspension of disbelief. We don't need it.
That's right. That's true. And then Zeus looks in and he sees this thing and he goes, "I told you not to open it," which he did. He did tell him that on Friday. He said, "Don't open it."
He did.
But, oh well.
I mean, when you've got Schrodinger's bomb, you need to do something.
That's right.
It's not going to be too exciting if you keep it closed and just say, "Well, is it or isn't it?"
That's right. It could just be that, you know, there's some pens and legal pads and stuff like that in there. Yeah, that makes sense. Or maybe it's got a gun. Maybe it's a James Bond type of briefcase.
I guess, but that would be less likely of me being a guest on the show. So.
Probably. And then a phone starts to ring.
Yes.
Which, again, we're not. It goes back to the fact, okay, where is this phone? You know.
Maybe that's the speaker on the side of the screen. It's the phone speaker. So it's not actually a phone as much as it's through the computer. We would have been very impressed by that.
Okay. All right. That makes sense.
You go, yeah, sure. Fine, it crazy does. Lady.
It's no, Lisa, you're right. It is the speakerphone. But my question then is, you know, what do you think the technology in 1995, 1994, whenever this takes place, was? It made sense that, you know, as soon as John were to open up the briefcase, so Simon's phone would tell him, you know, he doesn't have WhatsApp or anything like that. You know, like, how does Simon know that he has now opened it and therefore can call?
I completely believe it, because if they had, you know, car phones and such as early as what, 1989? When was New Jack City? Was that 91, 92, something like that?
They had car phones from the 80s, mid-80s.
Way back, yeah. So all of that is totally fair. And that's just what was like commercialized for regular people. So I would we have access to this technology? No, but would it have existed? Absolutely. I think, you know, Simon has access to military grade technology and this is what he's using. And I think that there's some mechanism, if you think of like location trackers and that kind of thing. So something as simple as motion detection to send a signal to his phone and say, "Hey, it's been opened." I mean, that seems basic enough.
Okay. All right. That's fair. I mean, again, it's not even technology that we have. That's available to us, you know, normal people.
No, you know, definitely have like not that. Even now? No. Well, I mean, I've got a Ring doorbell. I mean, I guess that counts. I mean, it notifies me when somebody's there, so I could certainly bring up the app and then talk to that person through it. The cameras on my house are, I can speak through them. So all I would have to, I just get the notification that, hey, this camera went off, it's motion activated. And then I can bring up that camera and talk to that person at my front door.
Even if you're not home?
Correct.
Oh, wow. So your house is haunted?
No, I have 3 cats. Which we found out the first couple of weeks we were using them, we realized we needed to deactivate the motion sensors on the inside. Because when the police come and they're told, "Oh, no, you just have a cat jumping on a table," they're not pleased. And they fine you for that. So we can't do that ever again, because I'm going to get a hefty fine for, you know, wasting time, which frankly I should, But
you got fined, or you got a warning?
We were warned. We were warned if it happened again, because the first time, and then there was a second time when we realized, that's what this is. And it wasn't like it was 2 days in a row or anything silly, but they were like, okay, so you got to figure this out. It can't happen again. And I totally understand that, you know?
Right.
So we figured out how to deactivate that part, so the stupid cats wouldn't be, you know, creating havoc for us and, you know, using up more money than they already do.
You ladies always causing problems.
Constant.
constant problem. Okay. If that keeps things, you know, fresh and fun, then okay, great.
I mean, you got to do what you got to do.
That's true. That's true.
So coming then, up the on shot. 8 years, so you got to keep things fresh.
That is true. That is true. So then we see Simon on the other end of the phone.
Yes.
And there's a lot going on around him, which, again, makes me wonder how he can actually hear himself with all those industrial sounds all around him.
But, Not to mention, how the hell does he have a signal down there? I'd say that so far is my biggest, I don't know about it. Well, I mean,
wait a second. So you're telling me when people go into the subway, there's no signal?
It's not great. But I mean, he's in a place that houses.
And there's all a big hole. There's a big hole up to the sky.
I mean, there's that too. But he's he's not just in a random subway. He's not in tunnels and open spaces. He's where they've housed all of this gold for how many different nations and corporations and whatever. So these walls are going to be thicker than thick. You know, like, this is not your average subway tunnel.
Right.
So okay, that surprises me.
But
maybe he's got a swanky satellite phone, because, again, fancy technology that I don't have access to even now. Luckily, correct. I'm not trying to, you know, rob Wall Street. So it's good.
Shh. Don't tell anyone.
Look, I'm a high school teacher. I got to fund my life somehow.
Right.
Hey, if the CIA has been listening through my devices in my house, all they hear is me talking to stupid cats. So, I mean, trust me, there isn't much to hear.
Or podcasters.
I'm telling you. They're getting advanced listens to riveting, riveting episodes.
And unedited, too.
I'm telling you. See, it's the best kind.
Makes sense. All right. So he continues by talking, and he basically says, I trust you see the message. It has a proximity circuit, so please don't run.
See, motion detection.
That's right. And then, well, again, he could just be saying it. We don't know if it's the truth. He doesn't say Simon says.
That's true. He doesn't.
Simon says there's a proximity circuit.
So please don't run.
That's right.
Oh, Jeremy Irons. He's so good in this movie.
He goes, yeah, you got it. We're not going to run. How do we turn this thing off? And then he begins to explain the whole situation. And he goes, on the fountain, there should be two jugs. Do you see them? A 5 gallon and a 3 gallon. Fill one of the jugs with exactly 4 gallons of water and place it on the scale, and the timer will stop. You must be precise. 1 ounce more or less will result in detonation. If you're still alive in 5 minutes, we'll speak then. Wait a second. And then the phone hangs up. Now, did you notice that when John is talking in the background, there's something going on?
No, I didn't.
Okay, so it looks like it's a dog park behind them.
Yeah.
You know, there are people playing with their dogs.
Yes.
And, you know, so it got me thinking, like, what are the official rules and regulations of, like, a dog park?
Okay.
Do you have any idea?
I might, actually, because my mother used to take her dog. One of the things you don't want them to do is share water bowls, which is really hard to moderate, because that's how they all get sick. So that's a problem. The other thing is, I don't know exactly how this works, but, you know, you need to keep a real close eye on your dog. And for the first couple of times that you go, your dog has to stay leashed, so that they can kind of socialize with the dogs that already know each other and are already used to each other. So I know that's a thing. And then you can let them go and they can run and play and whatever. And I mean, it seems like common sense to me, but you have to stay there. You can't just drop off your dog and leave. What else you got? Those are my bases.
You know, you just leave the kids.
Well, you know, somebody's there. Somebody's going to watch them. But you never know. People do some stupid things. How close am I? How am I doing so far?
No, you're doing great so far. You're doing great so far.
Yeah, I think that's everything. That's everything I'm coming up with. There's probably more that I'm not aware of.
Okay, so I'm first going to ask you some trivia questions about dog parks. What city do you think has the highest per capita dog parks in the U.S. for every 100,000 residents?
San Francisco.
Portland, Oregon.
No kidding.
Oregon has 5.7 dog parks for every 100,000 residents.
Interesting.
Okay. Now, where do you think the in North America is the largest highest per capita dog parks, number of dog parks?
Somewhere in Canada, but I couldn't tell you where.
You are correct.
You've gotten the correct
country.
Vancouver.
Calgary.
Okay.
Calgary, Alberta has the highest per capita in North America with 15.9 dog parks for every 100,000 residents.
Good grief.
Seriously.
That's amazing. That's a lot of dog parks.
That's right. Now, do you know how many households in the U.S. have dogs?
More than cats, I believe. I don't know how many.
43 million.
Wow.
Okay. Now, here's a better question. How many households have kids in the U.S.?
Fewer than that.
That is correct also. There are 38 million households with kids and 43 million with dogs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that says about either of those statistics.
I mean, I'm not a kid person. I am a teenager person. I can manage teenagers. I do not do well with children, small children. In fact, had breakfast today with, a wonderful married couple that we're good friends with, and they brought their two kids. And I think one of them is one. The other one might have just turned 4. And I was tense and anxious the entire time because, you know, kids move around and kids do things and parents are used to that. And I'm very much not. So I was anxious that a kid was going to fall out of the high chair, was going to knock his head on a corner, was going to do this, was going to do that, was going to run into the parking lot. And so it wasn't until I got into the car where I'm like, okay, now I need to take some deep breaths because I have to like bring myself back down from this. It is not something I'm cut out for.
Okay. That is fair. That is fair. But you're also not a dog person because you're a cat person.
I have nothing against a dog. I like dogs too.
You then don't fit into either of those categories.
No, I mean, I'm perfectly happy. I mean, I was raised with dogs. We always had dogs. I am definitely an animal person. I can't be in a space that, you know,
well, anyone looking at you, anyone watching you podcast knows that you're an animal person.
Definitely.
Because of your headphones, your cat headphones.
They notice I am a very mature adult. But yeah, no, it's just a matter of I've always had an animal. I can't, you know, when I lived in my first apartment by myself, I can't not have an animal. And, you know, sometimes I work long hours at school. So a cat was easier because I don't have to rush home to let a cat out. At least not mine. Mine are all indoor cats. So that's one of the reasons why we have cats instead of dogs, because he works some really long hours, especially when he's out doing his shows. And then depends on how long it's going to take me to get back and forth from school. So it's just more a matter of being a better scenario for the animal, I think.
Okay. Makes sense. Okay. So here I'm going to give you some dog park rules and regulations.
Let's hear them.
Okay. Dog park hours are usually from 7 a.m. to dusk, unless otherwise posted. They close them during periodical times of the year for special events or maintenance, which obviously probably means big cleanups. That's what I would think that means.
Yep. Well, they also tell you, you know, pick up after your dog. So, I mean, if you see your dog make a mess, you need to pick it up.
We will get there. enter at your own risk. Adults and children assume all risks associated with the off-leash dog park.
Absolutely.
No children under 16 are allowed without adult supervision. And any small children need to be within arm's reach of a supervising adult.
All small children and dogs need to be leashed at all times.
That's correct. And each dog has to have a license and proper inoculations.
Oh, of course.
They need to be parasite-free. And if they are sick, in heat, vicious, aggressive, or have previously bitten any persons, they're not permitted there.
Absolutely.
Okay, they have to be kept on a leash with a leash length not exceeding 6 feet when outside the dog park fence at all times.
Mm-hmm.
When you need to make sure that also when you're taking the dog from your car to the gated entrance, that they are still, that they're leashed the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
They have a special area that's a double gated holding area, which is where you leash and unleash the dog instead of inside the dog park itself.
Right.
When they're in the park, you can't have them leashed, but the owner must still be holding onto the leash. You can't have spike collars, you know, like what you would see in yes. a Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Yes.
And stuff like yep. that. What else? If you leave your dog unattended, they will impound it and send it to animal control. Meaning that the dog must be within voice command range at all times.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't follow these rules, you can be banned.
Yes.
Like Kramer.
You know? Yes.
All owners must clean up after their pets. Mm-hmm. If you see someone else who doesn't clean up, you should remind them that we want to keep this park clean.
Yes. Yep.
Any dogs that become aggressive will be removed immediately. And there is no discussion about it.
Right.
And how do they define aggressive dogs? It's either potentially dangerous or vicious dogs that poses a threat to other dogs or people by virtue of a single incident or history of unprovoked acts of aggression against people or animals.
Absolutely.
You are not allowed to have air horns or bullhorns. Inside this area.
And that makes you wonder, like, who put that rule up? Because some idiot did it. That's awful.
That's right. No food of any kind is allowed in the dog park, including people food.
Makes sense. Yeah, it makes sense.
No, but I love it how they refer to it as people food.
People food, right.
Yes. What is the maximum number of dogs that one is allowed to have of their own in the dog park?
Two.
Like, can you come to a dog park with 10 dogs of your own?
No.
And you're two. Like, what's the maximum? 3.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And they have,
I don't know. I just feel like, you know, people with 3 large dogs, like, that's going to be hard to manage. I don't care how good you are with them.
That's right. Okay.
I think you one for each hand.
That's right. Possibly. You cannot have female dogs in heat or puppies under 5 months.
Yep.
In there, you're not allowed to groom your dog in the dog park.
Makes sense.
When you leave, you must take with you any tennis balls, toys, or other personal items that you had. Otherwise, they will just be thrown away.
Yep.
Which, again, if you don't want to throw them away, you just leave them there and someone else will throw them with you.
There's always someone else to do your business for you.
That's right. those are the pretty much the main rules that they have in most of these. This article that I found has all these different like tips of how to be what to do inside of the dog park and stuff like that. But not even gonna go there. But it also got me thinking about the whole idea of pooper scooper laws.
Oh yeah.
Okay, which obviously is something also.
There's a list of laws. Like, I just feel like pick up the dog poop. Done.
No, meaning that you can get fined for it.
For not doing it, you mean?
You can get fined for not doing it. Exactly.
Yes.
Fined okay. for leaving it.
Yes.
Well, first of all, do you know what a pooper scooper is?
Yeah. It was it's a little hand. It's almost like a little shovely thing with two sides that you would kind of close around the poop. And it was just a mechanism that you didn't have to bend all the way down to the ground to get it. It was something that would be, you know, 2 or 3 feet long that you could maneuver from a standing position.
Correct. Okay. Yes. It was invented by a woman named Brooke Miller, mm-hmm. who lived in Anaheim, California. And she basically patented a metal bin with a rake-like edge attached to a wooden stick. And therefore, you know, when you would, had a hatch that could be attached to it, that you had like a garbage bag and it just you know, you're able to pick it up. So the generic term pooper scooper has been included in the dictionary since the early 1970s.
Yep. The whole idea of the like the metonyms, like Kleenex being a brand name and instead of facial tissue, now it's a pooper scooper.
That's right. That's correct. So in 1978, New York passed the pooper scooper law. This was Ed Koch was the mayor at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so controversial that they ended up needing the state legislature to actually pass it.
Why is it controversial? Is it controversial that they wanted to fine people for not picking it up? Is that the problem?
I believe so. Yeah, I believe that makes sense. I believe that's what it comes down to.
Yeah, nobody likes having to. I could see the legislature loving it, being like, well, we're going to make a ton of money off of this. But yeah.
Right. So 25 years later, so that must be in 2003, Koch was quoted as saying, if you've ever stepped in dog do, you know how important it is to enforce the canine waste law. New Yorkers overwhelmingly do their duty and self-enforce. Those who don't are not fit to call friend.
It's fair. Like, people are very serious about it. Well, they have little bags. They have little bag dispensers on corners. Like it's a thing, you know? It's a matter of public etiquette.
Correct. I mean, I've seen in my neighborhood trees that have signs on them saying, please do not let your dog, you know, do their stuff on this tree.
Yes.
You know, that type of thing.
Yes. There's a neighborhood near me that has a little.
I don't know if people will agree to that.
Oh, well, I don't know about that. They probably aim their dogs for that. But there's a neighborhood near me where two houses next to each other have a little like wooden, I don't know, probably like a Yorkie. And it's squatting and it's got a sign under it that says no, right? Like, don't poop on my lawn kind of thing. Yeah, it's like people take this stuff, but people take their lawns very seriously. So.
Oh, wow. Okay. I read through the dialogue between John and Simon here where he was explaining to them what they need to do. And I mean, one of the things that they get to show us along the way is we see the graphics change on this high-tech computer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it shows us, you know, first of all, two very crudely drawn pictures of a 5-gallon jug and a 3-gallon jug, which are both labeled on the screen. Yes. And then thankfully, they give us another one that shows 4 gallons mm-hmm. with an arrow into a jug and then another arrow onto the scale.
I mean, people need instructions, so it's good to have visual IKEA level instructions. To get this done. Makes sense to me.
Correct. Yeah.
And there's no sad IKEA man. So I'm very thankful. Sad IKEA man gives me anxiety. I can't. I hate that thing.
So, I mean, basically, the idea that it needs to be so precise is something that bothers me.
Yes.
I mean, because... I mean, as we're going to talk over the next few days, when we see the way that these jugs are and they're marked and the water and all that stuff, to get it exact is not going to be as simple as it's portrayed in the movie. Let's put it that way.
Agreed.
But we'll get there. We'll get there. We're jumping ahead a little bit with that. At this point, John and Zeus are looking at each other. Now, my first question is how does the graphic know to time itself with Simon's words?
That I can't answer. Nope, I've got nothing. He has rehearsed this so many times that he knows when the timing is going to work out. I mean, he's got everything lined up so precisely for this whole, you know, this whole heist he's got going. I mean, when you're pulling a heist of this caliber, you need to be precise with your timing. So I see him spending time right down to the last minute detail of making sure that his little speech to John McClane includes the exact timing of explaining the bomb mechanism as well as the visuals while he's on the phone.
To us.
Yep.
To us.
That's awesome. It.
Okay. It actually makes sense. I can understand that. Now
I give him all that credit.
Yes. You and I will be able to debunk the idea of the fact that this is a real 5-minute timer. Because it doesn't take all week for them to get through this. So
it does not.
You have to be, that's right. You have to be doing this, you know, minute by minute to know that 5 minutes is not really 5 minutes.
It's what they call cutting to continuity.
That's right. And then John turns to Azusa and says, I don't get it. Do you get it? And he goes, no. And the two of them are like really confused and frustrated. And then John basically shrugs his shoulders and then says to Zeus, get the chugs.
Yep.
You know, so now Zeus has to get his pants wet.
Yep. I mean, John's the cop. He's got to get somebody to do something for him. Plus, he's got that terrible splitting headache.
Yes. Yes. Because he has a hangover. Mm-hmm. Of course. But, you know, we will just have to wait and see what happens with that.
We're going to have to make it to tomorrow.
And that is the end of this minute. Do you have anything else you want to say for this minute?
I do not.
So the script, as I've been talking about over the last 2 weeks, the script is really, the continuity of the script and the movie are completely out of sync at this point. So I'm jumping back and forth between things here.
I'll allow it.
I'm sure you will. You don't have a choice. So
this is true. It's your show. So
that's not the point, but it's, you know, I'm the one who has the script. How's that? So I might reiterate some of the stuff I said last week because of the fact that it's completely out of sync here, but we'll still try to get to there. So it says a phone rings, the phone rings because John in the script, John and Zeus are supposed to be at a phone booth. Right. Mm-hmm. And then Zeus says, you can answer that. McLean grabs the phone. Hello. Multiplication is vexation. Division is as bad. The rule of three doth puzzle me, and practice drives me mad. Can you both hear me? McLean motions to Zeus, who comes up close. They share their phone receiver, reluctantly. Yes. The top of the phone booth. Zeus takes the phone. McLean reaches to the roof of the phone booth. His hand lowers, holding a cardboard box. Open it. McLean sets the box on the ground and opens it. McLean and Zeus stare in. Inside the box, a weighing scale, the household variety, attached to a digitally timed detonator. Turn towards the fountain. McLean and Zeus turn. Look, do you see the two jugs? The shot pans the edge of the fountain. We move past a couple of kids, an old guy smoking a cigarette. Two plastic jugs with handles sit by the lip of the fountain. One is a 5-gallon jug. The other is a 3-gallon jug. Simon says, fill one of the jugs with exactly 4 gallons of water and place it on the scale. McLean and Zeus exchange a look.
Why should we do that? That exact weight of water will stop the detonator attached to the scale. Detonator, where's the bomb? McLean looks over Zeus's shoulder. His face darkens. He sees under his breath. Over there, Zeus. Zeus whirls around and looks at a children's park about 50 yards away, a swing set, a jungle gym, a teeter-totter. A group of kids and their mothers and nannies are playing. The kids are terracing around the park. Under the jungle gym, a Samsonite briefcase glints in the sunshine. Simon continues, exactly 4 gallons in one of the jugs. I emphasize exactly. You have 20 minutes. McLean and Zeus look in horror. As the digital timer on the detonator flicks on, it reads 20, then flips to 1959 and begins counting down. Simon, wait, how are we going to? If I told you, it wouldn't be fun, would it, John? Click. Simon clicks off the cellular phone. We see that he's on street level. And that's it. So, again, I the 20 minutes bothers me. And it also bothers me the fact that the bomb is not next to them. You know, for him to have to look over into the park and happen to see a glistening briefcase, that's just...
Everyone, due to some technical issues, so we sort of lost the audio for Lisa's segment from her McTiernan Monday. So I'm just going to quickly read it back to you. Unfortunately, you won't get her or her explanations as to why she put things in this order, but this is her order. So her number 5 for McTiernan Monday was the movie Basic. Her number 4 was Predator. Number 3, The Hunt for Red October. Number 2, Die Hard with a Vengeance. And number 1, the original Die Hard. All right, so Lisa, would you like to tell people where they can find Lisa Lay
You can find Lisa Leahy somewhere on a beach enjoying the fact that she's on summer vacation, or you can listen to her ramble on tangents on the Rabbit Hole Podcast Network. I am on shows like Pictures and Conversations, a Rabbit Hole Podcast book club that comes out on the 20th of every month, or every other week you can hear me talk about The Gift of Horror with Jason Soto, in which we have come up with a bunch of subgenres and two films each episode that we talk about. Jason picks a film, I pick a film. It's kind of like a white elephant gift exchange, and we sort of decide whose gift is better in the end. So, some fun times.
Cool. All right, so finding me is very simple. Just a very quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Instagram, you can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, or you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. If you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
Johnny comes marching home again, hurrah, hurrah! We'll give him a hearty welcome then, hurrah, hurrah! The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.